Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing,
Phil? Good afternoon, Phil.
And we're going to be talking about Syria, the conflict that's reaching sort of a crisis point. There's going to be an international meeting, we're told, in Geneva. And, of course, there is fighting, and there are all kinds of allegations. And some brave folks in the peace movement have visited Syria, and we're going to be talking to one of them, and that will be coming up shortly. And we're also going to be talking at about the halfway point in the program with Isaac Saini. We're going to be discussing the race and revolution in Cuba. Again, it's a topic which has attracted a lot of attention. There's been some articles in the New York Times and elsewhere, and there was a talk in the city by Professor Ellis and Isaac and Professor Saini at the different book list. And we want to hear what was said there. And of course, there's also the Cuba 5 business. And Phil, let's announce that right now.
On rally to free all the Cuban Five now, Saturday, June the 1st at 1 p.m., across from the U.S. Consulate at 360 University Avenue. You can go to Facebook events, sponsored by the Toronto Forum on Cuba. Again, a rally to free all of the Cuban Five will be happening in many, many Canadian cities and around the world, Saturday, June the 1st, 1 p.m. at 360 University Avenue, or more precisely, across the street from it, because you're not allowed to walk in front of it.
You're not allowed to do. Oh yeah, no. You're not allowed in front. But all of our listeners know that. That's part of being a Torontonian. As a part of the University Avenue that you're not allowed to use. I think we are joined by Amir Masumi. Mr. Masumi was one of those who attended a conference in Syria. He went there, I believe, on a fact-finding mission and also to help with the peace effort. And are you there, sir?
Yes. Good evening.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on your efforts on behalf of peace. By the way, this is a particularly courageous mission, I would say, for all of you. Who led the mission? What caused you to go to Syria?
Thank you. The idea of a mission for peace to Syria came around last September from our friend May Reed McGuire, which is a Nobel Peace Laureate. We had a discussion, and until November to have some preparations, and finally February we had some good contact with some peace, very grassroots peace organizations in Syria. The name is Musalaha, which means in Arabic reconciliation. So after this contact, we scheduled for last February to go there, but because of the security issues, we couldn't, and after several time postponement, and we knew it's a dangerous mission, but finally we decided for the beginning of May to go and see the situation closely.
Yeah. And by the way, of course, going there involved also visiting Lebanon, and we are hearing reports, of course, that Lebanon may be involved or in a sense is part of the crisis. What did you find when you arrived in Lebanon?
Yes, we passed almost the first half of the mission for first days in Lebanon. We had occasion to see how the Syrian crisis has its effect, destabilizing effect on Lebanon. For example, only talking about refugee questions, Lebanon received almost half a million Syrian refugees. If you proportionally you want to have an idea about the impact of such a number for of refugees suddenly in short period for Lebanon, you can imagine suddenly the United States receive almost 75 million refugees. So the presence of the refugees is the destabilizing factor. But more than this, Lebanon is very fragile community based society. So any small earthquake in Syria surely has its effect on Lebanon, and we see that.
We're speaking to Amir Massoumi. He is an intellectual and peace activist based in Montreal. He's with Moussa Laha, and which visited Syria in an attempt to, I assume, among other things, to make sure that Westerners found out some a little more about what's going on. Reporting here is rather, we find it rather difficult to follow. What were you told by the refugees, by the way? Why have they come to Lebanon? What were they experiencing in Syria?
First of all, the situation is very dramatic. I think partly because of the capacity, because they are over the capacity of the Lebanese government, and the international agencies, they are so slow, and they are lack of resources. We saw some refugees who registered by UN agencies and other agencies with a little help, but we saw other camps without any help, and this in the condition which is not even appropriate for animals. So, but what talking about the refugee questions, we saw beside of those dark and sad and tragic pictures, we saw the parallel to that, we saw the manifestation of solidarity. We saw the beautiful human solidarity. For example, in 3 days of our stay in Lebanon, we went to Baalbek, which is a city, pre-Roman city with the historical site.
Very famous. Pre-Roman city?
Yes, pre-Roman city, which is a live museum. Yeah. So, we in entrance of the city of Baalbek, we knew I already they mentioned that last year and during my previous trips. In entrance of the city of Baalbek, there is a small Palestinian refugee. Its name is Al Jalil, because they are coming from after ethnic cleansing in Palestine by the Zionist occupiers after 1948. These people mainly they come from Galilee. That's why their camp name is Al Jalil. So. Mm-hmm. These camps is relatively small camps and very clean, very well administrated. Almost 4,500 population. But we discover in this little camp, the Palestinian refugees, they received almost twice of their population, the Syrian refugees. They share their very modest and very small one room with one or two family. In this tragic situation, the people who are already victim of those kind of the imperial and colonial plan since long time ago, how they accept and how they receive with an open heart the new victim of the same reason, which is a new colonial plan for reconquest of the Middle East.
Yeah, that's a very important story. I think I want to ask, actually, in this context, as we're talking about refugees, there were, at the beginning of this conflict in Syria, many, many Iraqi refugees that Syria had taken in. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. You see, I talk only about the refugees in Lebanon, which is the big part of the refugees there are Syrian refugees in Iraq to almost 100,000. There are almost 100,000 and more refugees, Syrian refugees in Jordan, and almost 200,000 in Turkey. In specific case of Turkey and Jordan, we know they are treated very badly, and even based on justification to medical treatment or the chirurgical treatment, they take off their organs, and they are the commerce of organs of those refugees. And we have, based on the very strong source, the credible sources, that some people even come to those refugees for the commerce of sex, buying the very little girl, 10 years, 12 years. Mostly those people, rich people from the Persian Gulf, Arab countries. So this is the situation of the Syrian. But yes, Syria traditionally is a country who received since decades the refugees. Not only the Palestinian refugees from other countries in the region, but recently, as you mentioned, last decade and more, from Iraq. We met with those refugees, and very their life is very different from other refugees. They are integrated in the society as Palestinian refugees. They don't live in the camp. They have the same rights as citizens. Yes, very popular, very dense neighborhood, but they used to have very quiet life. That's why some rebels, some people, mostly they target those kind of dense neighborhood and popular neighborhoods.
And you traveled then to Syria. What were you able to? Were you aware of the? Could you see and hear a war, or was it? What was it?
We have to. I have to tell you that it is really and very honestly, since 2 years, almost all the things that we are hearing in our main media, they are not true. This is very sad. Even since I'm back, it's almost 10 days, and I'm still in shock when I listen to radio, TV, and other media and read the papers. Those news and those analyses, they are not only wrong about the regime and pro-regime forces, but also wrong about the rebels. Because in the rebel side, also, that we had chance during our stay to go to and see closely, among the rebels and the areas controlled by rebels, they are refugees, they are displaced people, they are suffering, and they are destruction because of the military reaction of the government. So, but unfortunately, in the media, when even they talk about the rebels, they don't say the truth. This history of chemical gases, those history, we don't know even where they come from. We had very, as I said, one day and a half, we passed in the city of Homs and the surrounding areas, which is controlled by rebels since 2 years. After the intense negotiation and guarantees and so on, and they fulfilled, they respect their engagement for our security, and we saw when the rebels, even the rebels, the most radical faction of rebels, so-called Free Syrian Army, and even the fundamentalist Islamist groups like Jabhat al-Nusra, even those groups, but as long as they are Syrian and they are not foreigners, they are willing to some peace. They are looking some how exit of this situation, and we really saw that. Yes, we're talking about civil war. Mm-hmm. We didn't see civil war there. Yes, they are a conflict. Yes, armed conflict in some region of the country, imposed from outside. The fighters who come from outside mostly, and backed by NATO, United States, some Western European countries, and their allies in the region, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey especially. So that doesn't mean there is no protestation or contestation of the regime. Yes, the population had and still has the very legitimate demand vis-a-vis of this regime, which is a regime, post-colonial regime, who belonged to 60s and 70s of last century, a kind of autocratic regime, belonged to the, as I said, after Second World War, and probably belonged to period of Cold War. And unfortunately, this regime and the, with the authoritarian approach and management of the power didn't let any social and political space for the people, for the youth. But those changes are necessary, and the legitimate demand of the people are very, very true. But from the other side, taking that legitimate aspirations as a pretext, as a justification to realize, and we know, a colonial plan who aim to change and remodel all the Middle East, that's another history. Using the aspiration, legitimate aspiration of the Syrian people, and to send $1 billion and arms and foreign mercenaries, almost 60,000 mercenaries from different countries, from Chechnya to Afghanistan to Libya, Iraq even, and so on. They are in Syria, and most of the atrocities, the devastation, the suffering that's happened in this country, it's mostly comes from those foreigners, from, as I said, even from European country, and from North America, many Salafists, they went there. So in this, when we look at this reality and we listen to our media and to news, unfortunately, apparently we are living in another world, and we create the imaginary thing, and sometimes the imaginary world for the people, and sometimes I ask myself why. This way of dealing with the reality in Syria and helping those kind of Salafist groups doesn't help even the interest of the Western countries. It doesn't help even the interest of the United States, as supporting bin Laden and Taliban and so on.
Certainly analyzing the internal thoughts of the people who run Washington would take a very... A talented Freudian, I guess, to tell us what they actually are up to. They seem to like, at the moment, they seem to like destruction. They seem to like chaos. They even seem to like cannibalism, so long as it will bring an injury to the leadership of Syria somehow. But this is Amir Masumi. He was with Musalaha. Did I get that right? Musalaha.
Yes.
But you do come away optimistic. One thing I want to ask you about is, I know that that Washington and London both say, well, the solution is to this chaos and bloodshed is for President Assad to leave.
Mm-hmm.
However, even today, I read in the paper that the leadership of the opposition is in chaos. They can't even figure out at the moment who would represent them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how to be hopeful about, you know, these meetings. They're going to have a meeting in Geneva in June, and I don't know who Mr. Assad is supposed to talk to.
You're right. The opposition is not one, and they don't have. We have many oppositions, but the Syrian opposition, I think, it's talkable, it's approachable. But talking about regime, the Assad regime is not the most democratic and regime and that we can imagine. But in the context of Middle East. We have to understand the real situation. This regime, secular regime, has very solid basis. The minority, Syria is like a mosaic, big and strong Christian minority, which is from different denominations. A Jewish community that we never ever talk about. I'm talking about in religious plan, the Shiite, Sunnite, and Alawite, and the Daruz, which are very powerful. So, and ethnical plan, Turks, Kurds, and others. So, it's very diverse country, and basically, as we saw and we mentioned and we met with, basically, all those minorities and even big part of the Sunni community support the regime. Otherwise, the regime couldn't survive after 2 years. And again, we are talking about a civil war. No, there is no civil war. There are some attacks, yes, even around Damascus and some areas in the border of Turkish border, Jordanian border, which are, yes, under control of rebels. And we know why and how come, with a lot of help and intelligence. But you talk about Geneva Initiative. I'm afraid the Geneva Initiative comes from on the top of the Syrian people and achieve some colonial arrangement and probably with some concession from forced concession from Assad and his regime, and in middle of this, the Syrian people comes out the big loser, and the future of Syria big loser. I think instead of looking outside and looking around and looking mega policies and superpowers, which is important factor, we have to look the Syrian people. This is a problem of Syria and Syrian people. And I believe, and we have to believe, Syrian people, they are enough mature to find solution for their problem and to shape their future if we leave them alone. Mm-hmm. If we stop to interfere, if we stop our intervention with money, with arms, with mercenaries from any side, I think I believe and I observe that as long as it's Syrian concerns that we saw even in the rebels rebel controlled region, even with the most radical group, I say the most important thing that I mentioned, it was the Syrian identity. That's very important. I explain more. In case of Iraq, colonial intervention succeed to dislocate the national identity. Iraq today is not one country. It's at least three countries. Afghanistan also is not anymore one country. It's a federation of tribes. Libya, even worse, become, and the future is very dark for Libya, the perspective of future, and it based on tribal division. But I can say, fortunately, after 2 years of devastation, 2 years of suffering and interference, Syria is still the Syrian identity among both sides, long as they are Syrian and not strangers and mercenaries. The Syrian identity is very strong. I had occasion to talk even with the commander of the Syrian Free Army, and even the commander or some commander of the radical Islamist groups, Syrian one, and all of them at the beginning and first of all, they emphasized they proud to belong to this, to Syria. They are doing all that for Syria, for the future of Syria. So if such a national identity is that strong, so this is the best base to build the future of Syria with all the components, all the elements of even the opposition. First of all, we have to stop arms, silence the arms, stop violence, and especially ask the stop the any foreign intervention. And in this case, as I say, Syria, they are enough mature to shape and to rebuild their country and their future. Right. I can tell you to just say confirm why I am that at the same time realistic, but at the same time very optimistic. And well, I believe to possibility of the peace, emergence of the peace from the base, from the inside of the society, to just back that argument and this perspective. I realize both sides, they are understand after 2 years they cannot win, and this is the lose situation. And more the situation goes on, more both sides are losers, and country is devastated and destroyed, and the people are suffering. Now 1/3 of the people of Syria, they are refugees inside of country and outside of country. Yeah. Almost, as example, the population of Damascus usually been 4.5 million. Now it's almost 10 million. You can imagine all the problems that it can bring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my optimism is based of the situation, based of the some, as I said, very strong national identity. So we have to help. We have to ask. And let the Syrian to find a solution, some win-win solution for both sides.
Good.
For both sides, I mean both Syrian, both sides, not again foreigners or for interest of foreigners or for interest of the mercenaries or on the top of head of the Syrian people, some arrangement in Geneva or other places, the impose to the regime which is in the corner.
Well,
so it's possible.
I appreciate Amir, we have to go at that point, but I understand your optimism, and I think I agree with it, and I congratulate you very much.
Thank you.
We're really glad someone from Canada was there, and we hope we can talk to you again in the future as this unfolds.
Yes, unfortunately, we need more time to go through all those points. Series, very complex.
Well, we will do it, and you did a very good job for us. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Amir Masumi. He's in Montreal. The organization is Musalaha. And I apologize for my bad Arabic. I'm working on it. You're listening to the Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back on the other side with talk about Cuba.